Hello, and welcome to the Quilt Fiction Podcast. I'm Frances O'Rourke Dow, your host, narrator, and author of today's story. If you're new to the podcast, Quilt Fiction is the home of Friendship Album 1933, also by me, an audio novel available free of charge via iTunes, YouTube, and most podcast services. You can learn more about the podcast at our website, quiltfiction.com, where you can also sign up for the Quilt Fiction newsletter. I invite you to join the lively and friendly community in our Facebook group, The Quilt Fiction Club, where we discuss books, quilts, and pie. If you're looking for more quilt fiction, please check out my novel, Birds in the Air, and the story collection, Margaret Goes Modern, which you'll find at your favorite online booksellers. Thanks so much for listening. I wish all of you the happiest of holidays and a wonderful 2020. Enjoy the story. Dresden Plate, Florence, 1930. A Friendship Album Story by Frances O'Rourke Dow. For the life of her, Florence Grangerfield couldn't decide what to wear for her volunteer shift at the soup kitchen. Surely not her new suit, purchased the week before at Olney's Fashions, as much as she was dying to audition it. No, something plain was called for, something somber but not dreary. She finally settled on a brown day dress with white polka dots and brown Oxfords. Normally she would have livened up this ensemble with a crocodile skin belt and her red cloche, but Florence didn't think kicky accessories were quite right for the setting. The soup kitchen was run by the women of Our Savior Lutheran Church, who had converted their large fellowship hall into a canteen of sorts. When Florence arrived Tuesday morning, a line of people stretched out the door and halfway around the block. What always surprised her was how normal everyone looked. She'd seen the pictures of bread lines in the newspaper, the men huddled in oversized coats, shapeless hats pulled down over their brows, but the people lined up outside of the church seemed like the same people you might run into at Albert's Grocery or the Paradise Cinema. And, after giving it some thought, Florence supposed they were the same people, only now they couldn't afford a night at the movies or a weekly bag of groceries. It was her sister-in-law, Emmeline, who had suggested Florence volunteer at the soup kitchen, mostly because she'd grown tired of Florence feeling guilty for having survived the crash unscathed. "Don't you see, darling? It's people like us who are in the best position to be helpful," Emmeline had said one morning over coffee a few weeks earlier. "Instead of wishing your bank account had been decimated like everyone else's, find some way to be useful. Give Biddy Jenkins a call. She's in charge of some sort of breadline over at Our Savior. I'm sure they could use you. Besides, this will be your first normal Christmas in years. There was that terrible business with Arthur, and then your mother last year. May she rest in peace. This is the year to jump back into the spirit of the season. Serve some soup. Drink deep from the punch bowl." "Not at the same time, I assume," Florence had replied with a smile. She knew, of course, that Emmeline was right. The last 2 years had been awful, and although Florence had dutifully put up the tree on Christmas Eve, she hadn't felt the Christmas spirit in ever so long. Maybe helping out those in need would do the trick. She called Biddy the next day and signed up for Tuesday lunch duty. She'd been all thumbs her first shift, spilling the soup and making a bad job of cutting sandwiches into neat triangles, and she'd felt too shy to talk to the people she was serving. Florence desperately wanted to express her sympathy, but noting how the other volunteers chatted cheerfully with those they served, as though this were a church supper and not a soup kitchen, she quickly decided that the best thing was to smile as she passed out sandwiches and ladled soup, saying what she might say to a guest in her own home. "Be careful now, it's hot," or, "I hope you like tomato soup, it's awfully good today." Today's crew of volunteers looked to be the usual Tuesday group. None of them was from Florence's social set, but she knew a few from her days at Milton Falls High. Millicent Block and Franny Hertz had been in several of Florence's classes over the years, and the three of them had always been friendly. Now, when things were slow, they chatted about this teacher or that one and recalled funny stories about their beloved principal, Mr. Kalimber, who'd had a habit of mispronouncing words on purpose for comic effect. Marie DeWitt was another member of the class of 1924, but when Florence saw her Tuesday morning putting on an apron in the church kitchen, she didn't bother calling out a greeting. It wasn't that Florence didn't care for Marie. It was more that Marie had never cared for her and generally behaved as though Florence didn't exist. Mostly it hadn't mattered in the scheme of things. Who was Marie DeWitt in high school but a girl who volunteered for every dance committee but never actually came to the dances? She was class secretary, junior and senior years, that was true, mostly because she knew shorthand. Her clear dislike of Florence didn't carry any bite, or much of a bite anyway, because everyone else had liked Florence enormously. It was a slight temptation, Florence had to admit, to cross Our Savior's steamy kitchen, tap Marie on the shoulder, and ask, "Did I do something to you back in school?" To the best of Florence's recollection, she'd barely crossed paths with Marie. There hadn't been much opportunity to offend. "Florence, I read your sister-in-law's new quilting column in the paper last Thursday and just loved it." Franny Ward came rushing into the kitchen, shedding her coat as she made her way to the apron rack. She sounds like she knows what she's talking about. Florence followed Franny across the room to trade her own coat for an apron. "Oh, she really does. Emmeline's been quilting since she was a girl back in Kansas. You can ask her anything and she knows the answer. She's the one who taught me to quilt, you know." "Lucky you," Franny said, pulling an apron over her head. She turned to Marie. "Good morning, Marie. Do you make quilts? It seems like everyone does nowadays." Marie seemed irritated by the question. "I don't have time, and I don't understand how other women do. It seems awfully frivolous, with so many people out of work." Franny gave Florence a quick look, eyebrow raised, and then turned back to Marie. "People need bread, but they need roses too, you know." "Spoken like a true Bolshevik," Marie muttered, pushing her way past Franny and Florence as she headed out the door to the dining hall. "Oh, my!" Franny looked at Florence and laughed. "Was she this much fun back in school?" Florence shrugged. "Who knows? She never spoke a word to me. I never understood why she found me so distasteful, and now I'm afraid to ask." "Don't you know?" Franny's eyes went wide. "I thought you would." Suddenly, Florence felt like the last 6 years had fallen away, and she was standing in front of her locker while a friend relayed a bit of overheard gossip. "What in heavens do you mean, Franny? What didn't I know about?" "Her eldest brother worked for your father. That is, until your father fired him." "He worked at Grangerfield and Sons. Selling insurance?" Franny shook her head. "No, as a janitor." "How did you not know about this?" "He took some food somebody left on their desk one night, an apple or some candy, and admitted to it when he was questioned the next day. Apparently your father fired him on the spot. Marie and I were in the same homeroom class when it happened, and she went on and on about it. I'm surprised it never got back to you." Florence finished tying her apron. "I don't know why it didn't." "Well, it was Marie, after all," Franny said with a shrug. "She wasn't really someone paid much attention to." "I can't imagine why not, given her pleasant disposition." Franny hooked her arm in Florence's and continued, "You, on the other hand, were everybody's favorite. What was it you were voted senior year?" "Friendliest girl and most likely to take a nap in study hall," Florence reminded her old friend. "You were loved by all. That's my main point," Franny said as the two women exited the kitchen. "Except by Marie DeWitt," Florence pointed out. "Except by Marie DeWitt," Franny agreed. Florence tried to stay focused on the people in front of her, but her thoughts kept returning to Marie and her brother. She didn't know why she should feel guilty about Marie's brother losing his job, especially if he'd been stealing, although perhaps he had a reason. Not that Florence's father would have given him an opportunity to explain himself. Father had been the dearest man in so many ways, but he'd been strict about things, too. He held himself to the highest standards of behavior and expected no less of others. So, if Marie's brother hadn't eaten all day or needed a bite of something to settle an upset stomach, it would have been of no concern to Father. Stealing was wrong and, therefore, indefensible. She could understand why Marie would have been upset, but surely she couldn't have believed Florence had anything to do with it, or could have set things to rights, even if she'd known about it. There was no reason to dwell on the matter, Florence supposed as she ladled out soup. Still, she couldn't help but glancing over at Marie and wondering if her old schoolmate had taken pleasure 2 years ago, when she heard the news that Florence had been left at the altar by Arthur Purefoy. Had Marie relished the small notice that had appeared the second week of December in the Gazette's Out and About column? "Man leaves for England on the Mauritania. Plans include touring Europe and Africa," the headline had read, and the brief article informed readers that Arthur Purefoy was taking a solo journey to parts known and unknown. Plating a sandwich, she passed it to an elderly man dressed in a suit and tie, a blue handkerchief in his pocket, looking for all the world like he was taking a break from his job at the bank. "It's tuna fish with chopped celery and onion," she informed him. "I've heard it's very good." "It looks delicious. So good of you to make it for me," the man said with a slight bow. She hadn't actually made the sandwich, but Florence smiled all the same. "I hope you enjoy it. Come back for a bowl of soup when you're done."
I have a bad habit of spilling," the man confessed, patting his tie. "Dolores will fuss if I come home with soup down my front."
Florence watched as the man moved down the line and then made his way to a table. She liked knowing a little bit about him, that he had a wife who might fuss if he spilled soup on his tie. And wasn't it lovely that he went to the trouble to dress for lunch? He was a man down on his luck, but he still cared about how the world saw him. She glanced down the line, where Marie was folding napkins. She probably thought putting on a tie for lunch in a soup kitchen was frivolous. What would it be like, Florence wondered, not to take pleasure in quilts or nice clothes, to prefer only bread, never roses? Well, she'd given altogether too much thought to Marie DeWitt for one day, she decided, especially since Marie probably never gave her any thought at all. Surely she wasn't standing at the end of the serving line passing out napkins and silverware while ruminating on Florence's past humiliations or her present-day opinions. Marie had made it perfectly clear that Florence Grangerfield was a person of no importance to her. Because of forces beyond Florence's control, Marie had decided she wasn't worth talking to or taking into consideration. And hadn't Arthur Purefoy done exactly the same, she realized. The man who had left her at the altar without a second thought had decided against her in favor of another kind of life. It wasn't fair that a person could be dismissed so easily, that she could be dismissed so easily. But, looking around the room, the long line of people with empty bowls in their hands, Florence knew that in the scheme of things, being abandoned by the man you loved wasn't the worst that could happen. Far from it. "Be careful now," she said to the woman in front of her as she filled her bowl with steaming soup. "You don't want to burn yourself." Of course, she hadn't really been left at the altar. In reality, Florence had been sitting in the little room at the front of the church with her mother and Emmeline when a knock sounded lightly on the door and a note was brought in by the minister's wife. "Forgive me. I can't. Not now. Give me time," Florence had read, her eyes darting over the words, and it took a moment for her to understand the meaning of what Arthur had written. Emmeline, who was Florence's matron of honor, held out her hand, and Florence obediently passed the note to her, wondering as she did who should tell the guest to go home. Mother? Or Thomas, her eldest brother and the official man of the family? Surely Florence wouldn't be expected to stand in front of the church and explain that she'd been abandoned by the groom and would most likely remain a spinster the rest of her life.
Emmeline had issued a sharp snort as she finished reading and then passed the note to Florence's mother, saying, "Oh, I should have known this would happen. He spent most of his youth taking care of his siblings while his mother drank, so of course it's time for him to have a second childhood. Perfectly understandable, but he might have thought of that before he proposed marriage." "Is Arthur's family here?" Florence asked. "Or do you think they already knew and stayed home?" "His mother is here," Mrs. Grangerfield reported, refolding Arthur's note and handing it back to Florence. "I saw her escorted down the aisle 5 minutes ago. I'll go tell her the news, and I'll have Reverend Goolsby announce that the wedding is off. For now." Florence watched her mother leave, and then sank back into her chair, wishing she could melt entirely away. She was wrapped in yards of silk, which she wanted more than anything to shed, but she hadn't a thing to change into. As though reading her mind, Emmeline crossed the room and took Florence's hand. "When your mother comes back, I'll pop over to the house and find a dress for you to change into. You'll spend the night with me. We'll eat all sorts of scrumptious things and listen to records on the phonograph. I'll send Thomas and the children over to Harry's, so it will be just the two of us. It's possible I even have a bottle or two of champagne hidden away in case of emergency. We'll be outlaws and drink it all up. How does that sound, darling?" Florence could only nod. Emmeline handed her a handkerchief and said, "Try not to cry on your dress if you can help it. We'll wrap it up and store it in my closet for safekeeping." To the best of Florence's knowledge, her wedding dress was still in Emmeline's closet, where she assumed it would stay until the end of time. She'd never been able to look at it again, but she could remember every detail. Miles and miles of ivory silk with a train that stretched out 5 feet behind her, a jewel neckline, and a million buttons up the back. Really, she thought now, as she walked home after her shift at the soup kitchen, she didn't know what had been worse, being abandoned by her intended, or having to stand for what seemed like hours while Emmeline unbuttoned her dress so she could change into her street clothes. It was a relief to discover when she got home that Daisy was out running errands. Florence and her housekeeper weren't exactly the best of friends. Far from it, as a matter of fact. Daisy Krause had been working for Florence's family since the beginning of time, and Florence had inherited her, along with the house and her father's A68 Roadster. She could sell the house and car if they weren't to her liking, but the aging Daisy, with her less than stellar culinary skills and her chronic ill temper, appeared to be hers forever. Florence hadn't a thing to do until 5 o'clock, when she was meeting Emmeline, Thomas, and the children for supper at the Beaumont Inn, which meant she had plenty of time to work on her quilt. Was it selfish to eat out when so many people struggled to find enough food to survive? Someone like Marie DeWitt would probably consider eating supper at a restaurant frivolous in times such as these. Florence smiled as she imagined what Emmeline would say to that. Her sister-in-law would have arched one eyebrow, put a hand on her hip, and asked, "I wonder how many more people would be out of work if we didn't frequent their restaurants, my dear." If the two women ever did find themselves in a room together, Florence was fairly sure Emmeline would bat Marie around like a cat playing with a vole and then eat her for breakfast, especially if she heard Marie suggest that to make quilts during hard times was ill-considered and irresponsible. Florence would be the first one to testify that there was nothing frivolous about making quilts when one was making do. Without quilt-making, she didn't know how she would have survived the last 2 years. She would have faded away, become a ghost of her former self. Walking into her parlor now, where her quilting was laid out upon the table, she could remember those days after Arthur abandoned her. She'd sat in this very room, in the club chair by the fireplace, an unopened magazine on her lap. Mother had kept her supplied with cups of tea and plates of buttered toast, as though she were suffering from a touch of the flu instead of a broken heart, but Florence couldn't bring herself to touch them. Emmeline stopped by every afternoon for a visit, bringing magazines, candy, and gossip, as though nothing remarkable had happened. Finally, after Florence had occupied the parlor for several weeks, through the Christmas season and on into the new year, her sister-in-law had marched in, pulled open the curtains with a dramatic flourish, and announced, "I'm going to teach you how to quilt, It's just the thing for you right now.
Florence, who had been considering a nap, could only respond with a shrug. I don't know anything about sewing, she said, in spite of that machine in the corner, by which she meant the Singer sewing machine her parents had bought for her in high school. Oh, I won't start you off on a machine, Emmeline informed her. No, I'm going to teach you the old-fashioned way, with needle and thread. Now, go spruce yourself up, and I'll take you to Martha Leary's sewing shop to pick your fabrics. Emmeline's power of persuasion was such that Florence actually allowed herself to be pulled up the stairs to bathe and dress. I'll fix your hair before we go, Emmeline promised as she filled the tub, and while you're in the bath, I'll choose something wonderful for you to wear, something fresh, for a fresh start. It had been the real beginning of their friendship, and 2 years later, Florence still couldn't think of a better friend than Emmeline, nor, truth be told, a bossier, more stubborn, or high-handed one. Emmeline was both the most self-absorbed person Florence had ever met and the most generous. Over the years, she'd learned to live with the contradictions. The almost but not quite finished Dresden plate quilt on the parlor table was Emmeline's Christmas present. Maybe. Making quilts for her sister-in-law, author of the new and already very popular Quilt Along with Emmeline column in the Milton Falls Gazette, was a bit like carrying coals to Newcastle, Florence feared, and she'd been chagrined at dinner on Sunday when Emmeline announced she was through with dusty rose and pastel green prints. Pastels, in general, had been overdone and were never very exciting in the first place, in Emmeline's opinion. The quilt Florence had been working on diligently since September was practically nothing but pastel pinks and greens. The good news was Emmeline was always making proclamations and then reversing herself. In next week's column, she might declare that nothing would do but pastels for the new year. But what if she'd meant what she said? Florence hated the thought of giving her sister-in-law a quilt she'd have no use for, especially when she'd recently come across a necklace and bracelet set of Mother's that would suit Emmeline's taste to a T. Well, there was no point in not finishing it, Florence told herself as she gathered her sewing things and carried them to the chair next to the room's best lamp. It was nearly quilted, and she could decide later whether to give it to Emmeline or keep it for herself. Not that she needed any more quilts. In the last 2 years, she'd made quilts enough for every room in the house. They softened the sharp edges and filled some of the empty spaces left by Mother's death last November. Another hard time gotten through with the needle in hand, Florence thought as she settled into her chair. Another loss cushioned with fabric and thread. On Christmas Eve morning, Florence arrived at the church at 8:15, an hour that normally would have found her still nestled under a layer of quilts, still very much asleep. But after some debate, the soup kitchen volunteers had decided to come early today and decorate the church hall. There had been some resistance to the idea, and to no one's surprise, Marie DeWitt had led the opposition. "How will people feel when they go home?" she'd asked the group. "Yes, they will have had lunch or dinner surrounded by festive decorations, but don't you see that will make things all the worse for them when they return to their dark houses?" "Well, how do you know that their houses will be dark?" Franny had asked. "Or undecorated. You can be down on your luck and still find a tree in the woods or make paper chains to hang in the living room. You're making assumptions based on very little information, Marie." "And so what if they haven't decorated for Christmas at home?" another woman wanted to know. "It would be nice to have a meal in a place that feels festive. Just because you're poor doesn't mean you don't have the Christmas spirit." In the end, those in favor of decorations had won, and they'd had a marvelous time making plans. Bringing the outside in was the best thing, they'd decided, and several of the women drove out to the country on Sunday to collect a tree and a carload of greenery. Florence and a few others had gathered at Franny's house Tuesday afternoon to make garlands and wreaths tied with red bows, which Franny's husband had promised to drop off first thing in the morning. Florence carried two large paper bags with her into the church. The first was filled with tacks, twine, ribbon, and scissors, the sorts of things that were always of use when one was putting up decorations. In the second bag, tucked into a pillowcase, was the finished Dresden plate quilt.
In the end, she had decided against giving it to Emmeline. Oh, she knew Emmeline would appreciate the thought and the effort. She might even appreciate the quilt itself. But Florence also knew that what Emmeline would appreciate even more was Mother's necklace and bracelet set, with its ornate settings of amethyst and pearls. That was a gift her sister-in-law would be truly excited about. Pushing open the door to the fellowship hall, Florence found a room full of women rushing about, as though they only had 30 minutes and not 3 hours until their guest arrived. Two of the girls were covering the tables with linens, and another was setting each place with a festive red napkin and a peppermint stick. Franny stood on a ladder, a large wreath in hand. When Florence saw her friend, she called out, "Let me go hang up my coat, and I'll come help you. Don't fall off while I'm gone." Everything about the fellowship hall and about the kitchen, which Florence entered, still smiling, had become familiar to her. Over the last 3 weeks, her once-a-week lunch shift had become a 4-times-a-week shift with 2 dinner shifts thrown in for good measure. She knew the regulars, both the volunteers and the diners, by name, and had discovered a gift for chat that managed to circumnavigate the harsher realities of people's lives. The weather, a new song heard on the radio, news about some movie star. Florence could fan any of these topics into a flame of small talk without blinking an eye. Mr. Callahan, the old man who dressed for lunch every day in the same suit jacket but a different tie and pocket kerchief, had become her special favorite. She liked hearing about his wife, Dolores, whose poor health, he said, kept her from joining him at lunch, but whose high spirits came through in Mr. Callahan's stories. Mr. Callahan seemed to be everybody's favorite, even Marie DeWitt's, who walked him to the door every day when he finished his sandwich, handing him a paper bag on his way out. "It's his dinner," Franny had told her, and Florence wondered out loud what the bag might contain, for him and his wife. "Marie brings it from home and puts it in the church frigidaire every morning. One time when she was serving on the line, I went back and took a peek inside. 2 slices of meatloaf, rolls, some carrot sticks, and 2 slices of cake, all of it wrapped in parchment paper." "So Marie has a heart after all," Florence had almost replied, but then she stopped herself. Of course Marie had a heart, but unlike most people, she kept hers encased in a layer of sandpaper. Now, as she made her way to the coat rack, Florence saw Marie standing by the stove. "I didn't know you'd be here this early," she called, setting down her bags and slipping out of her coat. "Did you come to decorate?" "I'm always here this time of day," Marie informed her. "I'm in charge of baking the bread for sandwiches. But I'll help decorate, too, if my help is needed." "So, have you changed your mind, then? Decided that Christmas decorations aren't so frivolous after all?" "I never said they were. But I know what it's like to go through hard times. Being reminded of what you can't afford isn't the nicest feeling." "But Christmas decorations are different," Florence insisted, hanging her coat on a peg. "Why, most of the things we're using to decorate didn't cost a dime. The woods are filled with trees and holly." "I suppose. All I'm saying is that it can be difficult when you feel like everyone is celebrating except for you." "I've felt that way for years," Florence said, but then she held up a hand. "Nothing to do with finances. I've been fortunate in that regard. But with my family and some of my friends, it's been difficult." "Well, then," Marie replied, but didn't finish her thought. Instead, she cracked open the oven door and peered inside. Florence waited a moment for her to continue, but apparently Marie had no more to say on the subject. Instead, she went to the sink and began washing coffee cups. Florence glanced at the bags by her feet. She'd gotten out of bed that morning wondering what she would do with the Dresden plate quilt. She'd briefly considered her brother Harry's wife, but Mabel didn't appreciate handmade things and would probably pass on the quilt to her housekeeper before the end of the day. Florence supposed she could give it to Daisy, but she'd given Daisy a quilt last year and knew the old woman would much prefer the gardening book Florence had already purchased, wrapped, and slipped under the tree. Finally, as she was dressing, she thought to bring the quilt with her to the church. She could leave it with the secretary, ask her to find it a good home. Now, standing across from Marie in the church kitchen, Florence thought it would be nice if just one person she knew could see the quilt before she gave it away, even if the person was Marie DeWitt. "I just finished this a few days ago," she said as she pulled the Dresden plate from its bag. Then, much to her surprise, she blurted out, "It's for you." Marie stared at the quilt, but said nothing, and Florence, embarrassed by the silence, fumbled for an explanation. I wanted... She stopped. What exactly did she want? To give Marie a reward for being kind to an old man? Did she want to make up for her father firing Marie's brother? Really, Florence had no idea what she was doing or why. Instead of finishing her sentence, she simply handed the quilt to Marie with a shrug, as if to say, "Your guess is as good as mine." It's very nice, Marie stammered as she took the quilt. "But I don't need it. I have a perfectly good blanket on my bed already." "Take it anyway," Florence insisted, wishing she'd never pulled the quilt from its bag. "Besides, it's not a blanket, it's a quilt. Just take it, would you?" Marie shrugged. "Fine, I'll take it." And that was that. Florence picked up her bag of ribbons and tacks and scissors and returned to the church hall. She felt oddly deflated, although for the life of her, she didn't know why. What kind of response had she been expecting from Marie? Hugs and kisses? A pledge of eternal friendship? No, of course not. She'd given the quilt impulsively. She hadn't had any time to formulate expectations. But if she was being honest with herself, maybe she'd been motivated by the hope for a crack in the ice, a thin ribbon of understanding between them. "I see you, Marie," Florence might have been trying to say with her gift. "Maybe now you can see me." "Florence, you promised you'd be right back," Franny called cheerfully from her ladder. "You don't happen to have a tack in your bag of tricks, do you?" Florence smiled at her friend. "As a matter of fact, I do." "Angels, we have heard on high," Franny sang out, and then she began to really sing. "Singing sweetly o'er the plains." Within a matter of seconds, a chorus of voices joined Franny's slightly off-key warbling. Florence stayed silent, lost in her thoughts. She wished desperately now she hadn't given the quilt to Marie, who wouldn't appreciate it, wouldn't notice how small and neat the stitches were, how carefully the colors had been paired. She'd made a mistake, Florence realized, but she supposed there was no way to fix it. She opened her mouth to join the others in song, but the words eluded her. Strange. It had been one of Mother's favorite carols, and yet for some reason, Florence couldn't sing a note.
"Don't you look pretty today?" Mr. Callahan greeted Florence as he stood before her in the soup line. "My Dolores loves a striped dress."
"Tell Mrs. Callahan I say Merry Christmas, won't you?"
"Happily, happily," Mr. Callahan said with a brief bow. "And the same to you, my dear."
A short time later, Florence glanced up to see Marie walking Mr. Callahan to the door, just as she did every afternoon. Today, Marie was carrying two packages in her arms, one of them a paper bag. Mr. Callahan's dinner, Florence assumed. It took her a moment to realize that the other package wasn't a package at all. It was a quilt. Her quilt. So, not only had Marie not appreciated the quilt, she'd cared so little for it she gave it away at the first opportunity. At least the recipient was Mr. Callahan, Florence comforted herself. Oh, if only she had thought to give it to him. Putting down her ladle, she turned to the woman next to her. "Cover for me for a second, would you? I'll be right back." With that, Florence moved swiftly to intercept Marie, who was heading toward the kitchen. "Did you at least tell him I made it? Did you at least care that much?" Marie ignored Florence's question. "I think there's some coffee left. Do you want a cup?" Florence didn't, but she followed Marie through the kitchen door. Really, all I want to know is if you told Mr. Callahan that I made the quilt. I assume you didn't claim you made it yourself.
Walking over to the stove, Marie poured herself a cup of coffee.
Bitter, she said, after she took a sip. But frankly, I could use the boost. I've been here since 6.
Florence felt tired, as though she'd been pushing against a door that wouldn't open, and she knew now couldn't be opened. Arthur was gone, her mother was gone, and they'd be gone forever. No amount of filling soup bowls or making quilts would erase that fact.
Just tell me, she repeated after a long stretch of silence. Then I'll leave you alone.
Don't be daft, Florence. Of course I told him you made it, Marie said. Why would you think that I'd lie about that?
I didn't really think you'd lie, Florence said. I just didn't know you'd care enough to mention my name.
I told him you made it, Marie repeated, but that you were too busy at the moment to bring it over yourself. He was very pleased and said that he'd thank you the next time he saw you. To be honest, I think he was a little bit overwhelmed. Apparently, Dolores loved quilts, always talked about learning how to make one.
Loved quilts?
Yes, loved them, in the past tense.
Marie looked at Florence, her expression almost sympathetic.
Dolores passed away 2 months ago. Mr. Callahan likes to talk about her as though she were still alive, but he admitted to me a few weeks ago that she died from pneumonia in October.
Is that why you bring him his dinner?
Marie nodded. He doesn't cook, and he doesn't like to go out at night, so I fix him something at home and bring it with me in the morning. He has an icebox, so he can keep it cold until supper time.
She walked over to the sink and rinsed out her cup before continuing.
I thought about suggesting that you give him the quilt, but I was afraid. Not that you wouldn't want him to have the quilt, but that you'd run over to him the way you rush into everything and make a fuss about how much Dolores would love it.
I rush into everything?
I've never seen you enter a room at a regular pace. You trot and you skip and sing la-di-da. Isn't everything wonderful?
It's irritating, quite frankly.
Florence frowned.
I sing la-di-da?
And maybe not quite, but you are awfully expressive. I didn't want to put Mr. Callahan in a bad spot. He might feel like he should tell you the truth about Dolores, and then he'd have to give up his little fiction that she was waiting for him at home.
Marie dried her cup and returned it to the shelf.
When I told you I didn't need the quilt, I was telling you the truth. My mother and her sister make quilts all day long instead of doing anything useful. I have 3 on my bed already. But Mr. Callahan, well, he needs a quilt. He needs your quilt. He's just like you in a way. He loves beautiful things.
You think my quilt is beautiful? Florence asked, feeling her cheeks grow hot.
Yeah, of course I do, Marie said. She sounded like she was growing bored with the conversation. I'm not blind. Now come on, we have lunch to serve.
Florence watched as Marie marched through the doorway on her way back to the dining hall. It was ridiculous to feel so pleased by the fact that Marie thought her quilt beautiful. It didn't change anything. At least she was pretty sure it didn't. Or not much, anyway.
Still, Florence couldn't stop herself from smiling.
Marie turned back around, as if to see what was taking Florence so long.
"Come on," she said with a stomp of her foot. "People need their lunch."
Florence didn't move.
"Merry Christmas, Marie."
Sighing, Marie shook her head, like she couldn't believe she had to say something so obvious.
"Merry Christmas, Florence."
Funny how those perfectly ordinary words felt like a gift, Florence thought, as she followed Marie out the door. A poorly wrapped gift, unhappily given, packaged in layers of resentment and irritation, but a gift all the same.
"Shepherds, why this jubilee?" Florence began to sing on her way to the dining hall. "Why your joyous strains prolong?"
"See what I mean? La-di-da all day long," Marie complained. "Just stop, would you? No one needs your singing. They need you to give them some lunch.
Maybe they need both, Florence said, as she reached the serving line and picked up her ladle.
Bread and roses, Marie, she whispered before turning to the next person in line.
Merry Christmas, she called. I hope you like chicken noodle soup. It's especially good today.
Be sure it's true when you say I love you.